Hello and welcome to the Home Uplink podcast. Today is, November 17th.
It is a Wednesday.
My dudes. I'm not wearing my Spider-Man costume today, but it is Wednesday. Today, exciting news. Not really. nothing's changed.
Well, the market is trending down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
Nothing new, I should say.
Nothing new, yeah, exactly.
No new here. No new news. No, nothing crazy. Everybody knows what's happening. But. Interesting topic today. I guess if you're an investor. Interesting take. It seems investors are turning to commercial real estate as a way to hedge their bets on the driving inflation.
Interesting.
Yeah. It says commercial real estate, which is true, it's often considered a hedge against inflation, right?
Uh-huh.
It's because rents can be increased and real estate values tend to rise, well, obviously, with commercial property. But what really is good is... normally, when it comes to commercial real estate, you're getting a market rate on your rent per time.
Yes.
And you can change the value based on increases in the building. And there's a lot of things that go into commercial real estate's value, not just the, you know, a residential piece of land is like, okay, well, here's a house or here's an apartment complex. You kind of have to keep in line with the other places around you.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh, well, if there's two apartment complexes down the road and they're $1,500 a month, you can't charge $2,700 a month, right? You can't really do much about it. You're kind of having to fall within the same operating budget unless your properties are just like, you know, pristine marble columns, like,
oh, yeah,
you know, Tuscan villas, whatever. But
absolutely set up,
yeah,
you know, for just... complete luxury.
Yeah, unless the property is just amazing, right? Which is harder to really produce. Because
yes,
for somebody who's looking for a residential property, it's like, okay, well, why would I not just go with the one that's $1,500 down the road? Why would I pay $3,000 for this place when it's like, you know, marginally different?
Correct.
So I completely understand why they're going to commercial, because investing in a house or something like that is a lot harder to swallow right yes. now, seeing as how prices are so high. And with commercial space being at an all-time, I don't know if it's zombified.
The only issue that I see with commercial is just the lack of businesses that are in need.
Well, in some, in Florida, that's not a problem.
No.
In some states, that's an issue where they're not, you know, buildings aren't being used or something like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, the companies that rented the commercial space, I mean, there's a lot of companies paying for property right now that they're not in.
Correct.
I mean, there's tons of companies even still to this day.
Absolutely.
Because they, you know, just because you don't want to doesn't mean you get out of a commercial lease on a building. Just because it's like, oh, well, unprecedented times. It's like, well, that don't matter. I got a piece of paper saying you're going to pay either way.
Yeah.
Right. So, for instance, you can kind of hedge your bets there. And the only reason a company won't pay you is if, you know, they go bankrupt or something like that. So it's a different monster. And also commercial real estate is kind of in this weird space, because whereas residential real estate is so on fire, the amount of it is just so low, the prices are so high.
Yeah.
I mean, inflated pricing, really, it's kind of crazy. Commercial real estate, I mean, even for looking for the space that we're in currently, I mean, there's still tons and tons of commercial real estate that just is empty.
Oh yeah.
Just unused,
vacant,
and just looking for someone to buy it, or looking for someone to buy it and rehab it, or looking for someone to buy it and use it. Right.
Correct.
It's crazy. I mean, it's literally the exact opposite, right? The residential market is like a ghost rider with his head on fire. And then you've got
Nicolas Cage
commercial, and you've got a commercial real estate and it's a snowman. You know, nobody's even, it's so cold. People are like, oh, would you like a, we can give you $500 off a lease per month so that instead of you paying $1,000, it's $500 for the first 6 months. It's like they, when they have to incentivize people to lease something,
yeah,
you know, they're not doing well.
Exactly.
And so I get it. You know, they're probably hedging their bets thinking that, all right, well, property is going to be going back up more than likely. As times shift and things change.
Correct.
It's probably the understanding that people are going to more than likely start getting back into offices. It's been almost 2 years now. And so it's kind of a, I mean, we're probably going on 2 years in March or something.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much like they're thinking, all right, well, if we purchase up the commercial real estate that's for sale right now at the bottom of the market, because it really is the bottom of the market. I mean, I'm sure somebody would say, oh, have you seen Miami? Right.
Yeah,
have you seen LA? Yeah. You're right. Okay. But other places that aren't New York, LA, or Miami, it's like they're going to hedge their bets. They're going to go, yeah, all right, I can purchase these warehouses, or I can purchase these restaurant, you know, venues. I can purchase these things and then, you know, do a little bit of work on them in the meantime. And then when a company's like, all right, you know, we want to get back in there. We want to get back to work. We want to get back to this. We want to get back to that.
Yeah.
Right. They can go, all right, well, I have a perfectly, you know, we just redid it.
Exactly.
You know, we just redid it. It's perfect for you. Come on in. You know, new floors, new paint, AC was just redone. Come on in, rent it out, and blah, blah. You know, I think that's kind of what's happening is they're kind of...
Their business model has shifted due to the fact that the residential is very uncertain and commercial will have to come back. Not every single person who was sent home is going to be able to stay home. They're going to start asking people to come back to work, you know, a modified work week, or, you know, we're going to have a lot of people coming in on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the rest of everybody coming on Tuesday, Thursday, and then we're going to flip-flop, and then you still do. Because, statistics do show, unfortunately, people aren't that productive. I mean, I like to think of it like when you're in school, and somebody gets something taken away from everybody else who was kind of doing it the right way. But, you know, little Johnny just was going balls to the wall and decided to ruin the whole experience for the rest of everybody. I guarantee there's a portion of people out there who are taking this very seriously, and they're sitting there and they're getting on their laptops or computers and they got their phones ready at 9 a.m. and they're grinding it out because they want to stay where they're at. They want to stay in their house. They don't have to commute. They don't have to do this, XYZ. Yeah. But then there's other little Johnnies down the street who are like, yeah, well, I got my TV going on behind my computer. I got a bunch of tabs open up on my browser. I'm answering my phone about 50% of the time, and I'm answering my emails hours later. And those people are the ones who are kind of grinding it out to where now the employers are going, okay, well, our productivity is down quite a bit.
I mean, their productivity has been down for a year now.
You know, well, we can go back years and say the productivity has been down because of this open concept, you know, laissez-faire, let's have a giant powwow office space that, you know, Google and Amazon and Yahoo and all these large companies wanted to promote. Oh, we got a ping pong table in the middle of the room. Don't try and get your work done because Bill's going to want to play on ping pong in about 20 minutes. It's like, that's conducive to 20-year-olds who are like, yeah, they got free beer here. I'm going to come into work and, like, you know, code and drink some beer and... Okay, that was cool, but again, productivity then went down because, I got next. Hold on, Bill. I got next.
Well, it's been proven that their methodology for that was if they made it so enticing for people to stay at work, they'd stay at work longer than the hours they were, you know, needed to be there. So those companies like Amazon and Google and, you know, their headquarters, not the warehouses, obviously, but the headquarters, yeah. the ones where the comp sci majors, quote unquote, would go to, they were expensive areas. Everybody knows Silicon Valley, expensive as hell. San Francisco, expensive as hell. New York, expensive as hell. So for them, they went, I want a workspace so that I can keep these fresh out of college 22-year-olds. I can give them, you know, a high wage for what they're expecting, when in reality, in where they're at, it's low wages.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep them at work for much longer than they should be, because they're going to be going, oh, well, why would I leave? I get all my meals paid for. There's a gym, there's a pool, there's ping pong, there's a, you know, quiet rooms, there's nap rooms, there's massage chairs, there's all these things.
There's nap, yeah.
There's, you know,
there's meditation
there's,
quarters.
There's meditation pods. It's like, so, you know, I've seen enough YouTube videos of people who live out of their van and they park in the parking lot at the business they work at. And it's like, oh, I work for Google and I live out of my van. And yeah. It's like, that's because they sit there and they sleep in the van and then they go into work for the other, you know, 16 hours in a day.
Yeah, because they have electricity
because
and then, running water.
Yeah, they can sit there and they use the bathrooms, they use the gym, they get the food, you know. So it's like, I don't think people really realized that at the time, that their method of work was not like, you know, they go, oh, well, the cubicles and me sitting there going, hey, how's your day, John? And then I'm sitting there typing on my calculator. I hate that lifestyle. And it's like, all right, but you'd leave at 5 o'clock and you'd go home, right? It's like they thought to themselves, if we can entice you enough to stay, then you're going to stay way past 5 o'clock.
Correct.
And then we can keep you on property and probably working as well.
And you're all salary, so we don't really care about overtime.
It doesn't really
fact that you're salary.
Doesn't matter. So for them, they're going, oh, yeah, awesome. You're going to stay here for 16 hours, or you're going to stay, you know, you're going to live, you know, 3 hours away by bus, and we're going to bus you in on a 3-hour bus ride. And no, you're basically spending most of your life.
A brainchild behind that.
Yeah,
somebody sat there and was like, well, if we give them everything that they want, chances are they won't leave as often.
No, it's okay. It's 100%.
I get it.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is now, though, the understanding is that lifestyle and that work style choice, it only worked for so long, and people felt vitriolic hatred towards the old way of, you know, oh, there's cubicles and I sit in my cubicle and I have my little pictures up on the cork board, and then I type in my computer and I answer phone calls and stuff like that. But the real issue behind it is that, I mean, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, we have a background in commercial office furniture. So I've been to a lot of businesses and also helped basically furnished quite a few.
I'm gonna be honest. We have firsthand knowledge on most business.
Yeah, this isn't us just like spewing our.
We've furnished probably over $1 billion over the last 20 years in active office space.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a lot, but probably not $1 billion, but quite a bit.
Quite a bit. $500 million.
Not a billion, but quite a bit. I mean, offices for like, you know, the Elon Musk's Boring Company, Rakuten, Allegiant Airlines, like those like companies, right? Big companies.
Which is interesting because you know what Elon Musk's office in Vegas looked like?
Yeah, I could tell you because I designed it. Funnily enough, it's not what you guys think it is. It's not...
Let's just say they asked, the best part about it is they asked for those really neat, nifty... Okay, by the way, let's reference. This is Elon Musk's Boring Company, which is basically the tunnel system that he wants to be building between Southern and Northern California, to where you can take a rocket ship almost against traffic and get there in X amount of minutes. That's the whole idea.
Well, no, it's this tunnel that they're building.
I understand.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, it's not, that's different. The Hyperloop is different from what the Boring Company does. The Boring Company makes a tunnel. It's just for cars, and you put a Tesla on it, and you beat traffic.
I get it. Rocket ships.
No, okay, yeah, it's a different, yeah.
I know, I'm just joking. But what I'm saying is, so the company is AKA flushed with cash?
Yeah, I mean, it had money. Okay, here's the thing, right? You have to realize they came in and they said, what do we want?
We want, hold on, those cool booths that you can have private conversations in. They're like telephone booths of old school, but you can sit there and talk to your meemaw and your peepaw and not have everybody in the whole giant warehouse that we purchased listen to your conversation, because we want to have private conversations with people in booths.
Yeah. Privacy couches.
Okay. Privacy couches, due to the fact that, again, we don't want people overhearing our conversations that are very, very important to our relatives. And we want to be able to build a screen to where we can sit there and have a private conversation.
They also wanted to have a low workspace, and they wanted the conference room to look like, now mind you, the interior of this building, it was a warehouse.
It was
like warehouse brutalism, right? It wasn't, they had sectioned one part off of it, put air conditioning in, because this is Las Vegas.
A tin box.
Yes, but it was not like an office building, right? No. So we were putting furniture on concrete floor.
How do you like the guy who was sitting there with the giant screens
in the corner,
and just staring at all the screens?
Yeah,
and
like
all the
it was like the. If you guys didn't know this, they have a bunch of cameras everywhere, and it's kind of like, you know, the scene in The Matrix.
Yes.
When he goes and he talks to the architect, and he's just in that white room with screens all around him, it's literally that. They're in the building. There's just a dude, and he's sitting in a chair, and he's just staring up at like 600 monitors.
But it's not like a nice chair.
No, it's like a little. It's like, but okay, we gave him a nice chair.
Yeah.
But what? So basically,
we felt bad for that guy.
What happened was these companies, right, that people think of. For like, oh, they're so open, and they have a flagship office.
Let's reference too. This is before COVID.
Yes, this is way before COVID.
So this was like early.
This was 2018.
This was like fall of 2018 when they came and approached us, and they said, "This is who we are. We're owned by Elon Musk, you know, and we need to do this." But at the time, you know, the whole open-centric was a thing. They decided before even COVID hit. That wasn't good enough for them. They need to go back to the whole, we need little areas for everybody so they can get their work done.
So every company that I can, here's what I can say. For the companies that people believe coined this whole like open and airy office setting that people were using so much, and like this BuzzFeed, like, because I've been to the BuzzFeed offices too, like this really open, low table, like, you know, community workspaces.
Everybody's on the same level.
You know, that sort of thing. I'm going to tell you, it doesn't work because nobody gets their work done. No work gets done. Productivity is low as hell. And the companies that people want to center the look of their business on, that's their one office. So to put it into perspective,
correct.
Google has one office that looks like that, maybe two. Amazon has one office that looks like that, maybe two.
Where do you think all the pictures that you see online about their offices, those are from those exact offices? If you actually went down to a call center for Google or for Amazon, you would be probably shocked at the amount of tan or nude or even gray.
Basically, probably gray panels with black siding.
And everybody's using a, you know, $250 or $300 PC with a $99 monitor, and they're sitting there with a black phone, and they're answering questions for customers. It's not this luxurious spa that people, you know, see pictures of at their campus and they go, I want to work for that company because no.
No, it's like, you know, it's one of those things where, they go, oh, well, wow, look at this vacation spot. It's so great. Come pay, you know, $199 a night for this crazy nice vacation spot. And the pictures were taken 50 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh,
you're like,
it's by the
beach.
Oh,
great. So this is not, it's the old bait and switch, right?
Yeah. But going back to the original, kind of got all off topic because we, you know, going back to original conversation that Zach started out with is, the investment companies now are realizing that people are going to have to go back to that. Because what's going to happen is these quarterly numbers that keep popping out, and once the big wigs start losing some Lamborghinis and Ferraris from the garage because they can't necessarily make as much money as they were, they're going to say, what's changed? And you know what the biggest thing has changed, Zach? Work productivity.
Yeah. I mean, I know that maybe there's tons of people. The thing is, like, why are you going to tattletale on yourself too? Like, I see people on TikTok and YouTube stuff who are like, me at my job. And it'll be like, you know, one of those oscillating fans. Uh-huh. They'll attach their mouse to like a string and then attach it to the oscillating fan. And then it'll move their mouse for them. So, right? So it'll stay active on their like Slack or whatever work program they're using.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, well, they're still active. And then they go do whatever. They're like, yeah, I'm going to go down to go get food or go to the restaurant. Yeah, and
I'm getting paid to watch some Netflix.
Yeah,
right,
I'm
going
to take a shower. Or I'm going to go back to bed. Or, I mean, I know tons of people who went home to work. And it's like, you know, in the beginning, it was flustering because everybody had never really worked from home. And they were like, oh, I'm working from my coffee room, you know, on my coffee table or I'm working on my dining room table and my husband's sitting next to
me
and we're
both
working.
My kids get home at 2 o'clock and they run over and they start grabbing my stuff and oh my God, I need my own workspace. I had people building like workspaces in their garage with panels with lockable doors so they could go in there and say, I'm going to need you guys to stay out of this office so that I can actually get my work done. But those are the people who are, like I said, doing what they can to make sure that they stay at that position, which is, I don't have to commute anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we know a professor who is teaching, you know, remotely, and he had a little tiny shed that he put up outside and then got its own router, set it up so that he could teach.
Yeah, so he
and had, so he had his own space. And it's like, that's one way of working. He wanted to work from home and continue to do so that he could work from his house.
Do you know he's got to go back there, right?
I know. It's crazy.
They make him go back now.
I know. And it's like, how are you going to do that? He lives in Missouri now.
Well, he's going to have to fly back and stay somewhere for, you know, however long he has to, and then go back on weekends. And he's like, I moved to Missouri because you said I never was coming back.
Yeah.
And now, like, 6 months later, you're like, oh, by the way,
you have to come back.
Next semester, you're in the classroom. Yeah.
So it's crazy, right? Because he took it seriously.
Yeah.
But then there's people like who I'm talking about who are like, oh, well, I really just phoned it in for the past 2 years. And it's
I worked two full-time jobs.
And it's like, yeah, but some people did. Some people literally were like, there were articles written about people who were job hacking and they were sitting there getting hired at companies three or four at a time, full-time salaries at these companies. And they weren't doing anything.
Oh no, they were doing 2 hours of work for an 8-hour workday, but four companies worth. So they were doing 8 hours of work, but it was getting four salaries.
Yes, and they're like, this is how you do it. And I'm like, you're not breaking the system. You're just ruining it for everyone else.
Because
now,
else.
that doesn't make anything better. Because now you're going to sit there and go, oh, okay, great, awesome. So now everyone has to go back into the office they hate. Because they have no way of making sure that you're going to work unless they literally walk by you and make sure that you're working.
Yeah.
So now you don't get to go to the restaurant while your fan, you know, moves your mouse for you. It's like now you can't go take a shower or watch Lord of the Rings while you should be working.
Yeah.
It's like now you have to be at work for the 8 hours a day because you took advantage of it for 2 years straight.
And no more lunch breaks because we know that you didn't do anything.
but that's I think what they're hedging their bets on. I mean, back to what we're talking about is, you know, the way that we see it, and from office, you know, furniture and how offices are designed and how this sort of worked with a lot of people in commercial real estate in Las Vegas as well.
Yeah.
It's just the ebb and flow. It always happens like this. And it's like, oh, these unprecedented times caused it this time. And it's like, yeah, but it doesn't matter what caused it. It's like saying, oh, well, the tide comes in and out, but the tide came out and it comes back in.
Zach, I can't tell you how many times when COVID hit and we were shut down for those few months and then, you know, we were open back up. I can't tell you how many times old customers would call.
Uh-huh.
And not only say, do you guys install panels because we need to make a safe work environment, but also they would say, thank God this happened so that we can actually get these people to work, because they saw it as a, you know, COVID was a terrible thing, but they also saw it as a, oh, wow, like I can actually start sectioning off these people and they can actually get back to their normal routine, which is coming and sitting at their desk and working on their work instead of having this open concept and everybody being able to make eye contact and wave at each other.
So oh, I know. I had to redesign. I don't know how many offices I had to. I sold company's furniture. I've been doing it since 2013. I was selling people furniture, right? And I have done probably hundreds upon hundreds of jobs, right? And every single one of them from 2013 to like 2016, 2017, all they wanted, open concept, give me driftwood, give me grays, give me low desks, give me low panels with glass on top. I want an open, airy workspace for everyone.
I want to be able to open my office door and look out and see everybody's beautiful faces.
And I want a little
Apple laptops.
And I want a little lounge chair area over there. And I want to have like community tables inside these rooms. And it's like, that's great. Okay, sold them the furniture they wanted. They told me what they wanted. I designed it for them. And then I sold it, right? And here you go. Boom. Installed the furniture. Now it's in your office. We were getting phone calls from people. Not even, this was before COVID, mind you. This wasn't like, oh, this is 2020 and we need to COVID guidelines or something.
Yeah.
This is like late 2018, early 2019. People were calling going, hey, so I got to redesign. I had one customer who spent almost $200,000 on a 1,300 square foot office space, right? For an open, airy look, glass walled conference rooms, very open community table workspaces in the back, very Google hip looking office space, right? And I'll tell you this, he spent so much money on that one office. And then I said to him, all right, well, what do you want to do for this next one that's like seven times the size, right? And he's like, I want to do it like this other office you designed back in like 2011 or something. And I was like, oh, you mean just like high 67 inch high panels with glass surfaces on top and work surfaces and you have standing desks and sitting desks so that you have desks that people will use to call and make calls and cold calls from. And then this is where they sit down and do their work. Yeah, exactly like that. Okay, great. Yeah, I'll design that one for you like that. That was a phone call and a conversation I had so many times.
Yep.
Where office and commercial office places were just like, yeah, I can't keep doing this. You know, I need to have my space, right? I mean, even federal buildings. I mean, there is that, everything. I mean, whether it was a school or whether it was... pretty much most places in the city of Las Vegas, they all changed their mind very, very. It only took about 2 years for them to change their mind. And then what really pushed the rest of them was that to adhere to guidelines, they had to have compartmentalized workspaces, coverings for each person so that, you know, you weren't spreading germs, anything like that. And so that kind of got the rest of them who had gone with the low panels, the low look, the open work surfaces and open workspaces and stuff, to have to go back. And so now, I mean, now we're in, you know, we're staring down 2022 and you've got investors, commercial investors who were residential investors who were saying to themselves, you know what, I'm going to take a knee in the residential market. I'm going to move to commercial because I can kind of hedge my bets a little better and say, hey, people are going to have to get back into the office because productivity is historically low. And in doing that, people are going to need office space.
We know the market is going to be changing in the near future. People are going to need to get back to it, which is inevitably what we started with. So instead of us trying to turn and burn or make some profit buying and selling residential or putting them up for, you know, rent and having to deal with the hassle, we can just now purchase large buildings, chop them up, redo them, and then charge premium when people want to actually put their people back to work.
Yeah. And if people don't know about commercial real estate, you know, in residential real estate leasing, most of the time, a lot of it, since it's a lot of federal mandates and stuff, a lot of it is mandated by the owner of the property.
Correct.
The person you're leasing it from, they have to pay for a lot of it. They have to pay for upkeep. They have to pay for, you know, pretty much everything. You know, you have the amount of rent you pay, and then that's pretty much it. If there needs to be repairs on the building, it's done out of pocket, right? Out of their pocket.
Yep.
Whereas, I know a lot of people don't know this about commercial office spaces and commercial space in general. A lot of the times worked into the contracts for a leasing agreement and a commercial contract is the person that is leasing the building will end up paying for the costs of the upkeep of that building.
Correct.
I mean, we had times where people were paying for parking lots to be done.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
maintenance on the building itself.
People needing new air conditioners getting paid for. Pretty much, they'll sit there and say, all right, well, you're going to be using the building. You're going to be paying us this amount per square foot. So it's going to come out to this per month. We're going to sign a 5. And mind you, the contracts are also longer, right? And then they'll sit there and have genuine, you know, they'll have increases each year because they'll say, okay, well, you know, you're going to be paying this much this year, this much next year, this much the year after, because as time goes on, there's going to be inflation, blah, blah, blah. And it's built into the contract, right? Because some people will sign 5, sometimes people will sign 20-year contracts, right? So it'll be built in. But also inside it, it'll say, all right, the person who's leasing the building has to pay for, you know, any additions made or any repairs needed on the property or any of these things will have to be paid for by the person that's leasing it. So they really don't have to keep the money on hand for repairs or for additions to the building, because if somebody wants it, it's going to come out of pocket for the person that's getting the lease.
Correct.
Right. I mean, normally when you move in, you can say, hey, I want this to be partitioned off. I want this to be partitioned off. I want a room here. I want a room here. I want a room there. But that's conditions for the lease, right? Yeah. You're saying, in order for me to lease the building, I need it to look like this, right? And they're going to do that out of pocket. But then from that point onwards, they're going to go, all right, so now the air conditioner is, you know, going to need to be serviced and the lawn needs to be serviced and the, you know, the parking lot, you know, maybe it needs a new blacktop or, you know, whatever happens in the property. Oh, the plumbing's, you know, there's an issue where the something goes wrong with the plumbing, whatever. It's all going to be covered out of pocket of the person leasing the building.
That's why, you know, you always have to do your due diligence when you're looking into a commercial property lease. I mean, like, we looked at quite a few here and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, decent rates to get in, but then, you know, after the 6-month span or something, things would be increased or you'd be, you know, paying for electricity bill if you use it after a 5 o'clock span or over the weekends or whatnot. It started turning a little different.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look and you have to, I mean, I'm not saying every contract looks like this. I'm just saying when somebody gets into commercial real estate, you have to realize a lot more falls on the head of the person leasing.
Now, as opposed to I do want to end on this. Breaking news. Oh. Just came up.
Okay.
Okay.
What happened?
Mortgage refinance demand is now in a free fall.
Because
interest rates have been increasing.
Uh-huh.
They're 31% lower than a year ago.
Okay.
And over the last 4 weeks, each week has been decreasing in 6%.
Wow.
So just by the little bit of ticks for the mortgage refinance going up to 3.2% today, 3.25%, they're starting to...
You're going to just continuously lose people from refinancing.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
So on that, we probably will watch this further due to the fact that we've heard conversations of loan applications being on at a stagnant rate and, you know, refinancing being one of the issues due to the, you know, increase in interest. But maybe the next show we'll definitely have to tackle this because that just popped up in my feed. And that's pretty interesting because that's less and less money that the, current homeowners are willing to take out of their property, which normally in my mind means that they see that They're either going to have to try and sell soon, or
they don't want to. They don't want to have to take and then be upside down because the equity is going to be gone.
Correct.
Yeah.
But on that, we want to thank everybody again for stopping by on this fantastic hump day. I'm sorry that you know, it is a Wednesday. It's one of those lovely in the middle and not quite there, but you'll get there soon days. And if again you have any questions or concerns, hit us up at HomeUplink. We have a full array of open house listings every single day. So we're going to actually do a podcast here in the near future that only goes over exactly what we do on the aspect of our tech company, which is facilitating open house listings so that we can kind of promote this specific podcast as our explanation of our company. We're going to be going forward in the near future, and you're going to start seeing a lot more HomeUplink banner ads. You're going to see a lot more radio ads. You're going to see a lot more social media feed, because what we're doing is we're going to be trying to get as many people interested at looking at open houses as possible. So again, we appreciate you stopping by, listening for, 30, 35 minutes. We always hit that 30-minute mark. And then if you do have any other questions, hit us up at admin or go to our site, or you can even, just send us an email, and we appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah. Thanks for listening yet again.